Channel Irk presents Irk's debut novel, A Moment in Time, the podcast version, as written and read by the author, Eric Brook, amomentintimenovel.com. Chapter 17, Steve's Struggle. 6:20 p.m, Thursday, 1st of April, 2010. The ambulance's lights could finally be switched off now that it was safely at the hospital. Throughout the trip, Rick had made sure that he did an assessment on Steve's condition as best he could, considering the amount of blood that he had lost. The trauma team would now have their hands full. A complete arm amputation and a leg amputation at the thigh. How the hell was he not dead, Rick thought. His training told him that this guy should be dead. Tim left the driver's seat and went to the rear to help Rick. With all of the wheels of the trolley on the ground, the medic started to wheel Steve's stretcher into the hospital. This was a well-rehearsed and often completed skill, doing a moving patient handover to the hospital staff. Rick began his speech like handover. The trauma team were waiting at the front door of their ambulance entry, having been pre-warned by the comm centre. Rick gave a quick handover. Steve was still in a critical condition. He needed fluids and he needed blood fast. He needed a switched-on team, and that is exactly what he had. "This is Steve," Rick began. "Hit by a train about 5 p.m, arm and leg amputation. Lost a lot of blood, unconscious for most of it. Under the train for about 20 minutes. Morph by 3, oxygen, fluids." "Resus 1," Dr. Lisa Brenning raised her voice, instructing the team about where to go. Wheeling Steve into the resuscitation room, the team carefully lifted him from the ambulance stretcher to the hospital bed. The resus bays, as they were called for short, had all of the equipment needed for the rapid treatment of the most critical of patients. In this hospital, there were 4 similar bays. On a good night, the resus bays were empty. On a bad night, all 4 bays were full and then some. Lisa and the rest of the team were very experienced in handling the busy nights, usually Wednesdays to Sundays. Being close to the inner city, they were experienced with incidents happening on trains and stations. Trips, falls, assaults and overdoses were common. People jumping in front of trains usually resulted in a one-way trip to the mortuary. But for Steve, his time had not yet come. Lisa and her team were determined to keep it that way. With their patient now safely in the hospital, the paramedics were now cleared to return to work. That was one good thing about a Category 1 patient. The hospital usually took them in straight away. With lower category patients, the paramedics often had to wait with the patient until the handover was conducted. Patients and their relatives wrongly believed that an ambulance ride was a passport to jumping the queue into the emergency treatment beds. They would not believe that they did not get immediate treatment. Steve needed immediate treatment and would get it regardless if the patient came in via ambulance or someone drove them. In Resus 1, a nurse named Jen connected the hospital's heart monitor, a drip, a bag of blood, and placed an oxygen mask on Steve's face. "Steve, we're going to look after you the best we can." Another nurse cut Steve's clothing off his battered body. For the first time since the accident, Steve's amputations were plainly visible. His missing parts had been retrieved by the on-site paramedics. A specialist surgeon was assessing the body parts in another room. Even though the surgeon had possession of Steve's arm and leg, he did not know if it was worth attaching them at this stage. The important thing to do at this time was to try and stabilize Steve. They needed to find the bleeding and to stop it. There was only so much that the bandages that Natalie had put on the scene could do. As quick as the blood was flowing in, it was coming out. "People, we need to find this blood loss and stop it fast," Lisa said. Her mind was now fully on the job. The earlier death that she had to deal with seemed like such a long time ago, even though it was only a few hours ago. Looking up at the monitor, Lisa did not like what she could see. She was not surprised, though. She wondered if it was worth letting Steve live at all. While artificial arms and legs were better than ever, he had a long recovery and rehabilitation in front of him. If she was questioning her profession before, she was questioning it harder now. As much as it was her job to help save Steve's life, his quality of life was not great now. According to her protocols, Steve being alive was a good thing. She might not personally agree, especially after today. It was time to give Steve some more morphine. If the team was going to work on him in his current condition, he deserved to be pain-free. Nurse Jen measured the dose and pumped it into Steve's seemingly lifeless body. Lisa was privately disgusted at this point, but she knew that it was her job to help keep Steve alive, even if it was rapidly becoming something that she did not want to do. She thought that somewhere, Steve must have family and friends who care for him and should not see him like this. Between the police and the hospital staff, someone would have to tell his family. "Would we treat a dog like this?" Lisa said out loud to no one in particular. The trauma team were looking at her in shock. Lisa did not normally talk like this. Looking down at Steve, she again thought out loud. "What made you decide that jumping in front of a train was a good idea, huh?" If Steve ever woke up, several people would be interested in his answer. Lisa talking broke the silence that the team had been working in. Lisa squeezed Steve's remaining hand. "You fought hard, mate." She was hoping that he would squeeze her hand back, even though she knew that he was so full of morphine that he did not know where he was. The heart monitor changed tone. It had slowed down since his arrival into the emergency department. This was a concern. The heart rhythms on the screen had changed shape too. This was a concern too. Had the paramedics been too slow in getting Steve to the hospital? Was the morphine wearing off and straining Steve's heart? Had he lost too much blood? There were so many questions going through Lisa's brain. She did not have time to process each thought separately. She did not have time. Things were not good for Steve. His heart had changed rhythm and not for the best. The stress and trauma combined with the major blood loss was stressing Steve's heart. If the team was to keep Steve alive, they needed drastic action right at that moment. Lisa needed to shock Steve's heart. Looking down at the pads on his chest, she said quietly to him, "Sorry, mate." And then said to the room, "Shocking, clear." The whole team stood back from Steve. They needed to do this for their own safety. Another doctor pressed the button on the machine at Lisa's command. The machine delivered an electric shock to Steve's chest. That afternoon, his life and the life of everyone who worked hard to save him on the scene, in the ambulance and in the hospital had changed forever. To live or not to live, that was the question. His heart rate was dangerously low. "We are using so much blood. 9 bags so far," Jen explained. It was her job to make sure that the blood that was flowing into Steve. The paramedics did not carry blood product with them, so they could not have started their process. Despite the pressure bandages An hour had passed where blood had been coming out, but no blood was being pumped in. In an attempt to catch up, Jen was pumping blood into Steve using two bags of blood at once. "I will need some more blood soon." The heart monitor showed some improvement in terms of heart rate. Lisa squinted as she looked at the heart monitor mounted on the wall. She wanted to see that the rhythm had improved. It was not inconceivable that another shock would be needed. Sometimes a second burst of electricity might be needed. "Shocking again. Clear." Once again, Lisa shocked Steve's heart. "Come on, Steve, don't give up now." Lisa was alternating between wanting him to live or die. It was an awful feeling that she never dared tell a patient. Looking at the heart monitor again, Lisa had a worried look on her face. Against the odds, Steve was showing a lot of fight. Surprisingly, Steve's heart rate was improving. It was either because he was going to get better or he was about to die. Lisa did not know which way it was to go. "Oh my God," Jen squealed. This was unlike her. "Oh my God," she repeated. Taking her eyes off the monitor, Lisa's eyes moved to the closed eyes of her patient. She squeezed his hand. The whole team was looking towards Steve. The brightly lit room was deathly silent. Jen's squeal led to the whole team to look at Steve's monitor. They knew her well enough to know that she did not lose her professional control. Professional nurses did not squeal. Professional nurses did not cry out or scream. Against the odds, Steve's condition was improving. With the forces involved in the impact, it was a credit to everyone concerned that Steve was still alive. The wrong move at the wrong time could have resulted in major consequences such as paralysis or death. Death was always on the cards in this situation. All of the team knew what it was like to lose a patient. Despite their experience and the support available, it never got easier. Breaking the silence in the room, Lisa cleared her throat before speaking. "Steve, welcome back. Do you know where you are?" Lisa asked. On this occasion, Lisa did know the patient's name. That was not always the case. She moved her pretty face next to his. His face was bloody as no one was concerned about his appearance just yet. The expression on her face changed from fear and concern to happiness, if only it was to be short-lived. For the first time since he was screaming at Central, Steve spoke. In a low, croaky voice, he did not know where he was. His eyes opened slightly, squinting against the harsh light of the hospital room. Looking deeply into Steve's eyes, there was a tear running down Lisa's face. The tear fell from Lisa's face and landed on Steve's bloody face. Because of the tube down his throat, it was hard for him to talk. Me, Steve? Wait, if you want it, I'll scream out something. I won't take this. Leaving you hoping for something you know isn't real. No, I believe. Feel inside my suggestion gets you what you want. Time is passing by, never standing still. Woohoo! Done it! Yeah! Woo! Party! Na 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 na. Wow, g'day, I'm Erk, and oh man, this has been an absolutely epic program. and an absolutely epic project. Thank you very much for listening to my debut novel, A Moment in Time. Of course, you can find out more information at amomentintimenovel.com. Go to amomentintimenovel.com for more interviews and more information about the novel and the process. The process started on the 1st of April 2010, which is the day that the book was set. And oh boy, I've learnt so much, both as a first-time writer and also later as a first-time person in production of a podio book. I've been podcasting for nearly 4 years now, and this has been a major challenge. With a couple of potential narrators, I've ended up, as you've heard, doing the narration myself, and that was a challenge indeed. I've already had people ask me, is there going to be a sequel to A Moment in Time? And that is entirely possible. But for the moment at least, I am just going to relax. It's been a very, very busy year. There's been a lot of work with the podcasting and my usual podcasting projects at channelwork.com. I've written and self-published a book, and I have also produced the podcast version all within the space of a year. And so now I'm just going to relax somewhat, especially after the recording and the editing process. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you to everyone who has been the inspiration for one of the characters, whether you've had a small part or a big part. Thank you. Thank you to everyone who has read either the electronic or the print version, and if you haven't yet, you still can go to amomentintimenovel.com. And if you have made it this far, and if you have made it through listening to me for 17 chapters, thank you very much as well. It wasn't my original plan to have me narrate it, but things happened and I ended up doing it myself. I wanted a female narrator to do it, but you know, these things happen. And that's life. That's certainly been an interesting learning experience and an interesting 12 months or so for me. So if you'd like to keep in contact with me, feel free to. The easiest way to follow what I'm doing, and I will still be podcasting of course, is to go to channelwork.com. I'd also like to thank Emotus. Emotus are the band which you have heard for the intro and the outro for A Moment in Time, the podcast version. The song is called Negative. If you are in Sydney and you like their sort of music, you should definitely go and check out Emotus. They put on a rather excellent live show. But even if you aren't in Sydney, their music is definitely worth checking out. Check them out, reverbnation.com/Emotus. Thank you very much to Michael, to Melina, to Rose, and to Sarah. You guys have been an absolutely great inspiration as well, and I love rocking out to your music and seeing you live whenever I can. Thank you also to Evo and PodioBooks.com. Without PodioBooks.com, many of you would not have heard this particular novel. Until next time, wherever it is that you hear me over the interweb, I'm Erk from Channel Erk, and it's a very, very good night interweb, and I'll say this officially, A Moment in Time, the end.